Natural Resources to order. Patrick, I think we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2581. And Patrick, why don't you explain it, and then we'll bring up people we need to testify on this.
Sure. Madam Chair, 2581, we heard this bill on the 9th, which was a week ago today. The bill declares vermiculture to be an agricultural activity and makes the products subject to regulation as agricultural commodities. The committee had some questions that and asked that the Department of Agriculture come in to give their perspective on the measure. Also included in your package is a fiscal impact statement for the measure, which I believe the Department of Agriculture might be able to briefly discuss. Speaking with Legislative Fiscal Office, it's possible that the fiscal analysis may require a revision, and hopefully we can get the Department of Agriculture may be able to speak to that.
Okay. Why don't we call up the Department of Agriculture again? Good morning. Thank you for being with us. You weren't at our last hearing, so we had some questions from the committee on the stance of Department of Ag on this bill, and maybe you can enlighten us a little on the fiscal.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair Smith and members. I'm sorry I wasn't here when the bill was heard. I was in Cleveland, Ohio, taking care of my father, who's been in the hospital for almost a month. And so I feel a little disconnected, but I did try to catch up on this in the last day that I've been back. So would you like to just ask me the questions that you had?
Does the committee have any questions of the Department of Ag? We wanted to know where you stood on this declaring vermiculture to be an agricultural activity.
Okay. Well, for the record, my name is Chuck Craig, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Ag. And the department has, we have no objections to this bill, and of course we're always supportive of activities that represent positive economic development related to agriculture. So we don't see a problem really with it. We don't see things about it that would conflict with other types of agriculture from a land use compatibility standard. And I do know that there are vermiculture operations in the Midwest that are quite profitable going concerns. So that's...
Thank you. That's what Patrick had said. Mm-hmm. You had told them. What about the fiscal, or did you have a question? Yeah, that might have been on the fiscal.
Yeah.
Do you have any...
I wasn't here and I wasn't consulted. I didn't see this until this morning when I looked at my email from Patrick and I saw that. Let me tell you what I think about it. DEQ currently regulates composting facilities, and they have people with the special expertise in this area, and they inspect them, and they permit them, and they have a set of administrative rules that relate to whether the facility is using green or non-green feedstocks and what the potential pathogenicity issues are. We have some types of facilities, particularly dairies, that are doing composting as part of their waste management system, in which we coordinate with DEQ, but we don't duplicate their functions in terms of inspecting the composting part of the operation. We just cooperate with them, and we have a memorandum of agreement with them to that effect. So I guess what I would say is, if we were to leave that the way it is, they already have the staff and the capacity to do this, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure that they would place the same kind of fiscal impact on this bill. If we had to get new staff, if we had to go out and do that, then this fiscal might be reasonable or realistic, but I would not propose we do that. It doesn't make any sense to me as long as the industry folks are okay with that. We would not want to just create additional bureaucracy when the capacity is already in place to do it.
Yeah, I think you're liking what you say. We don't want to create extra burden either. So you find that as long as you don't duplicate the services, you continues to monitor and inspect.
Right. And I could expand a little bit, Madam Chair. There are, I think, three or four areas that the functions of our agency might intersect with this. One would be as far as regulation as a composting facility, and we've just talked about that. The other would be in terms of the right to farm statutes and whether what was going on at the facility was sort of reasonable and characteristic of similar operations in as much as the law classifies it now as an agricultural operation. So if there were a complaint about nuisance or trespass that were filed, we might get involved in making a determination as to whether what was happening there was really reasonable and should be protected by right to farm. Ultimately, the courts would make that decision, but we get a lot of complaints that really stem from one neighbor feeling like there's a nuisance to them as a result of an agricultural operation nearby, things like noise cannons to scare geese away and so on like that, sometimes result in complaints. And we help the farmers, and we sometimes try to mediate a solution between the neighbors when something like that comes up. So that's one area. But that would not have an additional fiscal impact. We already do that. The other two that I can think of just offhand is if, say, the worm casings were sold as a fertilizer and there was a guaranteed analysis on the label that was connected either with bags or with bulk shipment, product would have to be registered with us, like all other similar fertilizer products would be. That would not involve additional fiscal impact. It's an ongoing existing function that we do. And the other thing would be if the worms became a protein source, say, that were used as an animal feed, the facility would have to be licensed by us. But again, we already have a program in place to do that, and it wouldn't be a new cost, and the cost of it would be covered by the license fees and so forth. So,
well, I think we have lots of questions. Representative Roble?
Yeah. Madam Chair, mine is that, so what I'm hearing you say is that if in fact we allow DEQ to continue to do the inspections, you don't see any significant physical impact.
No, that's correct, Representative Roble.
Well, and I'm looking at the bill, was wondering if there's anything in the bill that would keep that would not allow the Department of Environmental Quality, is that what it is, to do this? I mean, would something have to be changed in this?
Madam Chair, Representative Beyer, I read the bill with that specifically in mind, and I don't believe it would, because other forms of composting on other agricultural operations, and Three Mile Canyon Dairy is a good example, they have an individual composting permit from DEQ. They're inspected by DEQ in cooperation with us, where we try to coordinate the work we do with the animal waste permit that the facility has, as well as the composting. And so I don't see anything in the bill that takes away DEQ's authority to regulate it, because the basis under which their regulations are occurring are actually the pathogenic potential of the operation. It's not really water quality, and it's not, they're not trying to regulate an agricultural practice. So given that the precedent is already set with other kinds of composting operations, I don't think the bill would cause that. It does, though, from a right to farm standpoint, classify vermiculture as a farming operation, and then it, because of that, it would provide the protections against rights of private action for nuisance that farming operations have available to them.
Thank you. Representative Beaufort.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Obviously, you know, we have the fiscal impact thing in front of us. I think what I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, is that in a nutshell, you're willing to sit down in the next couple of days with representatives of the vermiculture industry and come up with a more efficient plan that could be reflected on the fiscal analysis rather than the one we're looking at in front of us. Is that kind of what I hear you saying?
Oh, that's correct. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. And Representative Burley?
Thank you. And I appreciate you pointing out these areas of existing capacity that you have, but the workload is going to be commensurate on how big the vermiculture industry is in the state of Oregon, which is a question I'm still trying to get an answer to. I mean, how widespread is the interest in this bill and having this declared as an agricultural use?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I don't know. I just don't have any kind of market information to give you what I would consider a, you know, some sort of authoritative information on that. I'd just be speculating. And
okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Boquist, did that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam. I'm assuming when, in regard to the question that Representative Burling even asked, that if you sat down in the next couple of days with representatives of the industry, you'd have a better grasp of the magnitude and be able to come back to the committee and speak as a representative of Oregon agriculture on this issue. I know this is all new to you and
yes,
new to most of us. I mean, I think of the movie The Dune or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm very supportive of the concept, but I'm very nervous about the fiscal impact as it sits in front of us.
Yes. I think what you suggest very possibly could be what happens when we have the discussion with the representatives of the industry.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Rocha?
During that discussion, could you include DEQ? They might have a better idea of how many places are out there.
Sure.
But it's
sure,
this particular thing, because they're already investigating doing the composting stuff.
Yeah, the conversation I had with Patrick this morning, he said that Bob Danko from DEQ had indicated that they would continue to do these if that was what everybody agreed upon. So,
follow up on that, and I think that I feel good about that part. But they also should understand how many operations there are.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing the inspections now, and so hopefully that could give us a better idea of the scope.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you, committee, and thank you, Chuck Craig. I think what we'll do is we'll try to set a meeting up in the next few days and bring this back and see if we can't address the issue of the fiscal with Tom Hughes. And I think he was depending a lot on what you testified to today. So I think we're hearing, you know, we can make this work. So I think we'll just let you guys work on this issue. Representative Scott and his constituent will work on this issue with you, and Bob Danko from DEQ, who has indicated that they would continue. So we'll be bringing this back, I guess. So thank you very much.
You bet.
Any other questions?
Nope.
No. Thank you. I don't have anyone signed up. Was there anything anyone wanted to add to this before we? Sure. Mr. Holcomb? Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for making the trip down here. Seems like we have continuing hearings on this. I just wondered if there was anything you wanted to add to what you heard this morning.
Well, the question, Madam Chair, that you asked about the number of operations, there's probably two or three dozen small people that, you know, feed worms, stuff generated on farms and things like that. To bring it to the level that I'm working on, I'm probably the only one in the state doing it at this point.
Do you think that industry would grow if we...
I'm hoping it would grow because of the product is an excellent agricultural soil amendment. Right. It can be classified as an organic pesticide as well. The need for wet waste materials, both agriculturally generated and municipally generated, to be put to the best use possible, could conceivably, you know, make the industry grow as far as waste management, when waste management engineers were prepared to step up and realize that vermiculture really works. This is one of the major hurdles in bringing vermiculture into play this way, is most people in that industry are either mechanical or chemical engineers, and it doesn't gratify the education to watch vermiculture do something that we cannot do mechanically or chemically without creating issues, vector issues. Vermiculture eliminates 90% of those issues, odor, seagulls, things like that. Right. So, because it's a mesophilic process more too than a thermophilic process. So it doesn't have the issues that composting would have on a large-scale facility because you don't have the thermophilic issues. Right. So, you know.
I think Representative Erblin has a question for you.
Yeah, and thank you again. Is the 12 or 13 or so small operations that are going, have you talked with them about the introduction of the bill and the effects it may have on their operations?
I've mentioned it to them in the past, but I don't believe that any of them are big enough that if they were doing something large enough that DEQ would want to regulate them as a composting facility, then they would already be regulated. If they're not, and most people aren't, because it's a big step from shovel and wheelbarrow to tractor and equipment, and most people don't make that step. So.
Yes.
I'll just go on, Mother.
Yeah.
So the people who do this in their home deals, this isn't going to have any effect at all.
I doubt it very seriously.
There is a fairly big, small industry with the little deals, composting that allow.
Right, and it's not going to affect the people that do their own home stuff in their backyards. Okay. And I doubt very seriously it would affect anybody that raises worms for bait. Because if they're already doing it, then they're under whatever regulation either the Department of Agriculture requires or the DEQ requires.
Great.
One more follow-up.
Sure.
Do you see these larger scale businesses like yours producing worms for those people who want to have their own little?
No, I see it the other way around, is the little people producing enough worms so that we can move the industry along in a better manner. And because we wouldn't be selling worms for little people to grow worms, to sell worms to other people.
Okay.
We would encourage these people to grow their worms, and then I would be interested in buying them. I have 200 pounds of worms that goes out every time I put a system online, and I raise those myself, some of them, but ultimately I end up buying them from somebody or buying some from somebody. And if this took off in the next 5 years to the point where you're doing a few hundred tons, let's say, in several different facilities over the state, you still got to raise that few hundred tons of worms, and there'd be a lot of small people that could get into that and you know, make extra money. Yeah.
Any further questions for Ms. Rivers? Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on 2581. Is that the number? open a public hearing. 2594. Patrick, do you want to explain it to us?
I'd be glad to, Madam Chair. House Bill 2594 clarifies that documentation of agricultural quarantines that is provided to county clerks are presented for recording in deed records rather than for filing in the offices of those county clerks. The bill has a, we have not received a fiscal analysis for the bill as of yet. There is no revenue impact for the measure.
Okay. And we have three people signed up. Oh, four. Okay. So first we'll start with Jan Coleman and Dee Berman from Yamhill and Cook County. Thank you and welcome. Are you going to explain this bill to us?
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Oh, if I may add, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned testimony from our witnesses is included in your packets.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. For the record, you want to state your name?
Yes. Good morning, Chair Smith, members of the committee. My name is Dee Berman. I'm the Crook County Clerk. I'm also president of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. This bill...
I think you're going to have to talk a little louder. Am I right?
Do you want me to say that again? I'm Dee Berman, Crook County Clerk, and also president of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Essentially, what this bill does is... Currently, quarantine orders or proposed orders are sent to the county clerk for posting on the bulletin board and for filing. We get so few of them that they really don't attach to the property. And what has happened in, and it's very minimal, but what has happened or what could happen potentially is that someone would have a quarantine against their like a vineyard or a grass seed growing or garlic field or whatever, if it's been infested with either weeds or insect or whatever, it gets a proposed quarantine order put against it, and that then that is filed with the county clerk, and we're supposed to post that and give notice to the public that this land has a problem with it. And until there's a remedy, then that quarantine stays on that property. And what has happened is if the owner of the land is in the middle or going to sell his property, he could sell that property without the buyer even being aware that there is a potential problem or that there is a quarantine.
So you're offering support for this bill?
Yes, we are. In fact, we're Representative Gilman was gracious enough to sponsor this for us.
Thank you. Chair Smith and members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk. Dee explained it very well. We just brought this forward because out of the blue, we got one of these a couple years ago, and it's kind of like, oh my gosh, what do we do with this? And again, we post it on a bulletin board. We get a couple of these, and we clock in our copy, and it's kind of like, okay, we'll put it back in the file. If someone comes, though, are we going to remember we have this? Filing is kind of out there. We file things and they're on record in our office, but sometimes finding something, particularly something of this nature, is difficult. What did we do with it? We go back and search through those file folders and hopefully can find it. So we just were hoping to get a better legal notice out there of some sort. And we thought, well, by doing it with the deed records, that way, particularly if a property came up for sale, the potential buyer would know that something of this sort was out there and in existence on the property.
Great. Any questions for these two? Well, thank you very much. I think you explained it very well. You want to bring them up together? We have Chuck Craig and Dan Hilburn of Oregon Department of Agriculture. you didn't put any for or against. So. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, again, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for Department of Ag. With me is Dan Hilburn, Administrator of the Plant Division of our agency, and that's one of the parts of the agency that probably does the most quarantine orders. Madam Chair and members, We're very interested in the concerns that the county clerks have expressed, and we'd like to find a way to address what they've brought up. But we need to point out that the bill only addresses a very small part of the whole issue, and I'm not sure that it would make that much difference in the overall scheme of things. And let me point out a couple examples, because there are several different kinds of quarantine-like orders and regulations, and most of them are not filed with the county clerks. Most of them are filed with the Secretary of State. What often is the case is that when there's some kind of an infestation or an outbreak of a disease or a noxious weed or something that's detrimental to agriculture and horticulture in the state, initially it tends to take on the proportions of an emergency to kind of get control of it. So often we do an emergency quarantine initially to control the flow of products that may be infested or whatever, and try to get an immediate handle on preventing the further spread of it. Then, typically, as we understand the problem better and have more time to deliberate on how to take measures that prevent it from becoming a bigger problem in the future, the emergency quarantine typically expires, and we adopt administrative rules that may prescribe practices that are designed to prevent the spread of it. For instance, washing off farm vehicles that may be going from one field to another in an area where something like a type of wilt or something exists, in order to prevent it from spreading. So we tend to progress from this kind of emergency state to a more practice-oriented prevention state as time goes on, and neither one of those actions by us is filed with the county clerks. The emergency quarantine is filed with the Secretary of State, and then the administrative rulemaking process is also filed with the Secretary of State. And we go through a process with an advisory committee of stakeholders and develop the requirements that we're going to have, and then pass administrative rules. And so I would say, just roughly, 90% of the actions that are like this that we do don't go through this process. And we might be better served if we tried to make them all more consistent, instead of just fixing one part of it that is occurring very infrequently right now. So what I would recommend, or what I would propose to the committee, is that if we could get together a work group with the county clerks and other industry groups that tend to be the most affected by these things, and come up with a proposal that might represent more of a solution, I think that we'd be better served by that. I'm not saying that they haven't pointed out a legitimate issue here and we'd like to fix it if we can, but I think we could gain more if we formed a little work group and took a larger look at the whole thing.
Great. Representative Burley had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's an excellent idea, too, to get folks together and try to work this out. But just from my understanding, because this is kind of a new process to me, if you declare the emergency quarantine, I mean, I think I could understand why that may not necessarily be filed with the county clerk, but I would suspect that what they're interested in is, once you promulgate the rules and you actually declare this is now a quarantined area, I would suspect that that's where their interest lies. That's what they want to get recorded in the deed. Is there, I mean, there should be no objection to that, is there?
Well, I think we don't have an objection to that, but what I'm saying is that normally that process does not result in that happening, and the parts of the law that are proposed to be amended here are not the ones that we operate under typically to do that. We generally go to administrative rulemaking and don't use the quarantine process after the problem is kind of matured enough for us to know what to do about it in a long-term fashion. We tend to go the administrative rule route. And so that does not trigger a filing with the county clerks. The law doesn't prescribe that. It's only the standard quarantine, and then there are actually summary quarantines, and that's another issue that I might bring up is there are quarantines that apply to fairly widespread areas, maybe counties or multiple counties, a whole state, could even be areas outside the state of Oregon. Then there are summary quarantines that maybe a particular property is infested with something, and we might feel a need to quarantine it to stop whatever the nuisance is there that's spreading. And those can be plant disease or pest related, or they can be animal disease and pest related. And interestingly, the statutes have the animal disease related summary quarantines being filed with the county clerks, but the plant disease related summary quarantines do not have that requirement in the law. So there's inconsistency in how all of these things are done, and I think that the point that it would be good if a specific property owner that was affected had somehow or other the quarantine or something that was affecting it was recorded, I think it's certainly an idea that has merit that we should pursue. But many of the actions don't continue for a period of time in which the property might change hands. A quarantine like regulation might come and go in a year. And the property may not be sold or transferred to another owner during that period. Likewise, I guess the other thing I would say is most people affected, I mean, typically these things affect commercial agricultural operations. Occasionally there's a small private landowner that has some kind of nuisance going on, but usually they affect agricultural operations. They don't get their information from the county courts. By and large, they get them through outreach from us and publication in the newspapers and other mechanisms that we have. So,
yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I have a follow-up question, but actually it's for the county clerk, so I'll hold it for now.
And I think Representative Gilmas so we could ask. Did he answer your question?
He did, yes, but I have a follow-up for the clerk, so I'll hold that.
Yeah, a couple of questions that came out of that question. Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the trigger in this current law, the current one, that has you send something to the clerk so that they will file it? And secondly, is there a trigger that has them file that it's the quarantine's lifted?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, if we do a standard non-emergency quarantine or a summary quarantine related to an animal disease outbreak, the law requires us to file those with the county clerks. it also, the law says that if the standard quarantine is lifted, you use the same process of notifying the county clerks that it is lifted.
Representative Byer?
I guess, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious if we have any idea how often this might happen, that a property that has some type of a quarantine on it might be in the process of sale. Does anyone have any idea? Do you know of any, have any history of that happening?
Dan, do you have...
My name is Dan Hilburn. I'm an administrator of the Plant Division. Chair Smith, Representative Byer, I can think of a quarantine right now, the sudden oak death quarantine that affects half a dozen properties in Curry County right now. None of them have changed hands since that quarantine's been in effect, but there's an example where it could happen. But that's the only one I can think of in the last 10 years.
Madam Chair, Representative Byron, what I might point out is that quarantine in Curry County has been done by administrative rule, not by the standard routine quarantine process, because the requirements are fairly complex and based on the best science that we've been able to determine to determine what needs to be done on properties where sudden oak death exists. And so the administrative rulemaking process seemed to be more appropriate for that.
May I follow up on that, please? I guess I'm not making a distinction, and again, forgive me, because this is an area that's all new to me, but, you know, if you develop the administrative rules, that deals with how are we going to manage within this quarantine area to prevent the spread of it and hopefully eradicate whatever the pest is or noxious weed or whatever the case may be. But nevertheless, the land itself, the area itself, is declared under quarantine, is it not?
Conceptually, it is, but legally, you may or may not have a quarantine as specified by this section of the statutes. You still have legally binding requirements that have the same effect as a quarantine, but you don't actually have a quarantine as described in this section. And one thing I might point out is that during the discussions about what to do in response to federal pressures on sudden oak death, one of the things that came up was people felt the word quarantine had a stigma associated with it and that it could have a negative impact on perception of Oregon product and perception of Oregon as a producing region to our buyers. And so people really preferred to have regulation and certification programs in rule that were legally binding and had every bit as much teeth as a quarantine, but didn't have that stigma that might damage our reputation with the outside world.
Yes.
Chair Smith and members of the committee, I have a comment here that maybe will help clarify things. If you look at all the quarantine rules, and there's several of them, I've counted four this morning, our quarantine statutes, the department has some choices when these things happen, and we choose to use the route that Chuck talked about most often, with an emergency quarantine and then going to the rulemaking process for a permanent quarantine. There are other ways of doing it, and one of the ways has been pointed out here with filing through the county clerk's office. So the statutes have some flexibility, and they were adopted over a period of time, and they don't mesh very well. You can see there that there are things that could be smoother and more transparent, and I personally would like to see it specified in a way that everybody understood. I think just our discussion right now, you can see that it's complex. It's not easy to understand. So getting to that point is probably more than what this bill would do. And it's more work, but I think it's worthwhile pursuing.
Thank you. Representative Rotman, do you have a question? Thank you. Are you? Thank you very much. How come nothing in here is ever easy? We have Representative Gilman here, who graciously sponsored this bill, who brought us this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'm Representative George Gilman from District 55.
I was going to ask if we need to quarantine that tie.
Well, this tie isn't too bad. I've got worse. And they are quarantined.
Yeah, no.
But my wife quarantined.
Is it a pear or an apple?
No, it's a cat.
I brought this bill on behalf of county clerks, and just listening, and now you've got a picture, I do think we need a work group on this. And it does appear to me to be a problem that maybe more than that bill addresses, we need to look at it. Because if I decide I want to go buy a piece of property over in Crook County, I'd like to be able to go to the county clerk and know what's going on with that piece of property and not have to run around to two or three other agencies to find it out. Happy to answer questions. Yeah.
I guess my question would be, wouldn't the disclosure laws in the state of Oregon take care of that problem?
Well,
I mean, wouldn't the seller have to...
And maybe so. Maybe so, Chair. I don't... Because I'm not a real estate person, it may be that that's taken care of, but it's definitely something we should do some more research on.
Thank you. Any questions for
Representative? Less a question, more of a statement. Mm-hmm. What Representative Gilman pointed out, that I believe those real estate deals are what a reasonable person would be able to find, and if we don't have a centralized location, a reasonable person is not going to find it.
Yeah.
And I look at, I mean, just the confusion alone, we have an example that Representative Gilman, who was sponsored on behalf of the clerks there, that says genetically modified bent grass control areas is one of the postings in 2002, and yet the Department of Agriculture, I guess, missed that one. Just totally in support of a work group that can, you know, kind of sit down and work through this whole procedure and come up with a system that is beneficial to everybody involved.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'd be happy to serve on that work.
Okay.
Thank
I think
you.
You've been nominated. I think what we'll do, committee, is put a work group together. Representative Gilman has graciously offered his service.
Madam Chair,
yes.
May I ask the folks to come back up for a moment?
Oh, yeah. Come back up. Representative Burley had a question. And I guess my question is, would you be willing to participate in a work group?
Absolutely.
To work on this.
Actually, now two questions, because your question about the disclosure laws, perhaps you could comment on that.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, again, my name is Dee Berman. The disclosure laws, public disclosure, our records are open to the public. The problem with filed versus recording, when we record a document, it goes into the public record, it's given a number, it's given an identification number, and we locate it. I mean, it's kept in a consolidated index, and that the name and the property are identified. When we have a filed document, we simply put it in a file folder. We file stamp it. We put it in a file folder. Many counties, mine is guilty of this, we're kind of hard-pressed for space because we keep these hard copies. File documents are not required to be microfilmed, so we don't film them. We put them in a file drawer somewhere or a cardboard box, which happens occasionally. And those are kept in an entirely different vault than our recorded documents. So when someone is coming in from the real estate community or a title company, when they're doing a search on a land, those are not, and honestly, you just, I think I may have gotten one of these one time. We get them very, very seldom, but we get announcements from the Department of Ag about their elections on their different boards, and we post them. And it may happen in some counties that these quarantine orders may be treated in the same fashion. They're posted on a bulletin board, and then lost. I mean, we don't key in on the fact that they really do impact a piece of property.
Well, the question that I had for you as county clerks, and as a follow-up to the question I had with the Department of Ag folks, was, are the clerks interested in getting all quarantines filed and recorded with the county, or are you just interested in those that right now are already required, as we heard the earlier witnesses testify, that are already required under law to be filed? Or are you looking to be more inclusive?
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, honestly, we just want the documents that come to us to be required to be recorded. I have no, we have really no interest, or it's not our problem. And yes, that's not a good thing to say, but the problem are the records that come to us when someone wants to do a search on a piece of property. We care that we've taken care of the people of our county and have the records pristine and that they can find what they need to find. But the others,
okay.
We're mostly concerned with protecting our records and our counties.
Right. Well, and I think that'll make your job in the work group a lot easier, too.
We don't want control of this. Okay. We want them identified as documents that impact a piece of property and give the public notice that there's something going on.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative Summer had a question.
Yes, Ms. Berman. The last bullet point put on here regarding the removal of the quarantine, I think, is critical to this bill. There has to be a sound and reliable method of moving that blotch off our record of properties, and I think that's a strength of this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Rover.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. This is mostly just a comment. Now, having met a couple more clerks, I know the people in my counties, I know the person. Generally, they are people who really care and deeply about keeping records straight. And it is something I could not do, so I just want to comment on how it's so refreshing to hear people who really do care about making sure that the stuff that they do gets transferred to everybody else and work so diligently at it. And I just it's just kind of amazing to watch. And you all seem to have some of that same cloth that you that I've met so far. So I certainly appreciate that.
Thank you.
I was impressed that you didn't want control.
I don't think any of them ever asked.
Thank you very much, Jill.
What I think we'll do, committee, is put a work group together. Excuse me. And I think I'll put Representative Gilman in charge of it since he left the room. And then maybe coordinate it, and then we'll come back with. And it is a very complex issue, obviously, but I think it's an important one. And I think the committee understands that. So I guess we'll have put a work group together with Representative Gilman, Chuck Craig, county clerks, and then anybody else that wants to be involved in that. Thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wants to testify on this? I guess we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2594. Committee, that completes our work for the day. I hope you have the information on the hearing we're holding in Baker City on March 24th, 1 to 4 at the Baker City Armory. Patrick will take care of any information that you need or reservations. Or I know it's difficult and it's hard to get out there, but it's important. And then we're going to be assigned quite a few more bills, I'm sure, so we're going to have to step up and have more meetings, so I will try to schedule those, and I appreciate all the hard work you guys are putting in for all of us. Representative Roebling.
And in our little discussion before, Patrick, you will make reservations for air flight if we need to.
I will look into that this afternoon and see what's available.
Let people know on the committee that if it's available. Getting back may be important for some of us.
I'm sure it will.
I know that's what we're checking on.
Yeah, and Patrick will check on that and can give you any information on that. So we'll try to make that. And then our next, we're going to try for April 11th, which is a Monday. We're trying to get the location for that hearing, our other one outside the building. Other than that, we're going to be meeting here. So, any other questions?
Should we individually make arrangements? Because it appears that we will be gone that whole day on the 24th. With the speaker with regard to missing session.
I will coordinate with any members who are going to that meeting. I'll coordinate with the speaker's office and with the clerk's office to arrange for you to have excused absences. As far as other committees go, you may want to talk to your other committee chairs.
And let them.
About the
good idea. Any other questions? With that, we are adjourned.